Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Well, good afternoon. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. I am Lynn Hayes Freeland. I feel like it's been a minute since we've been together to talk about issues of health relating to the minority community. But I'm kind of excited about today's show because this is that time of year where we all start to think about doing things outside, being more active, eating lighter foods. But how do we put this all together to focus on the best health possible? So I have a series of guests today that are going to help me explore that very question. Ebony Evans is an educator. She is a farmer, which I'm just fascinated by. She is an entrepreneur. And Dr. Chantal Villalobos is a Latina doctor from California, board certified in family medicine and HIV. And she works at, and I'll be honest, I don't know what this is, FQHC, that serves primarily minority patients. Welcome to you both.
Thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely. Doctor, let me start with you first, just because I'm reading your bio and I truly don't know. What is an FQHC?
An FQHC is a federally qualified health center. It's a place where you can have patients with or without insurance be seen. It's kind of a wonderful thing in Pittsburgh. We have several throughout, and I work in one in East Liberty. But the nice thing is that whether or not you have insurance, you're underinsured, you're not insured, we will be able to see you. Many of us have sliding fees. And so based off of your income, we can be able to provide the care, many times free care. So it should not matter that you have insurance or not for you to receive health and have health care. And I believe that to be a human right. So it's very important for me for places like this to exist so that everyone
absolutely
can be able to have access to care.
And let me just stay right here for just a second. And I promise we're going to talk about all the other things we teased. But this could be a game changer because I don't know how many times I hear from people who say, I can't go because I don't have insurance. I can't afford it because I'm uninsured. This is a game changer.
And many people don't know about them. So I hope that people hearing this can spread the word and let them know. But they do exist, and they're all across the nation. And many folks who work in them are very committed to helping the communities who are higher at risk. And most of our Black and brown folks really qualify for that.
I was going to say, yeah. And most Black and brown people fall into that high at risk category. Ebony, let me jump over to you because I introduce you as an educator, a farmer, and you know, I like to see myself as a budding farmer, but I'm not there yet. Talk to me about how you got interested in this, how you got into it, and what the benefits are.
Okay, thank you so much for having me. So I will say that first and foremost, I am an educator. I went to school to become an elementary education teacher. I've worked in Pittsburgh Public Schools for about 11 school years. And farming isn't something that I grew up with. It's nothing that I can tell you that I grew one single thing growing up. I didn't have access to fresh food at all growing up. It's nothing that I ever thought that I would become. It's something that I feel called into. It was a very spiritual journey that started just with myself and my children in our backyard, just me trying to be a mom, teaching my kids to do something and to just stay put in our backyard. My son at the time, he had a basketball hoop that hung in an alleyway in our neighborhood. And I think the sound of his ball just drew other kids around. And before I knew it, I had kids just playing on my son's hoop. And eventually some of the kids asked if they could come in our backyard. As reluctant as I was, they were very, very persistent. So eventually I let a few of the girls in our backyard because I have a daughter as well. And they were just very interested in what was growing in our backyard. And they just wanted to be a part of it. They were asking a lot of questions. Before I knew it, I think just as an educator, my backyard turned into an outside classroom because the boys were just as interested as well. And I eventually started bringing different things out of my garage, out of my house, such as tables and chairs, in order to just set up different stations in order for to keep them busy, keep them safe, and teach them the things that I was learning at the time myself. Eventually, we grew over 30 different vegetables and wow. herbs that year. And I turned my backyard into an art station as well, where when they were doing other things, they would do like artwork, maybe paint rocks and do abstract paintings of plants and things like that. We had another station where they would research the seeds and issues. I had two laptops at the time. I would let them research what we were growing and if we were running into any issues in order to tackle the issues. We eventually started building greenhouses around the food in order to protect the food. And we were just learning and going and growing. And those kids, they just wouldn't go home. They came back every day. And at the end of that season, we had so much food. We eventually had like a youth farmers market in the back of my house. And that's where they sold the food, like to each other, to whoever came out, their parents, whatever neighbors, and they earned some money. And I looked at that as what it took to create community. And I let them know that's exactly what we've done. We mm-hmm. were learning. We had an education system. We were eating. We had a food system. I forgot to tell you that one of the kids had got hurt one time in my backyard. It was just a small little bruise on her knee. But it was an opportunity for her sisters to learn how to take care of her. I had all these other supplies. I helped them take care of her. Of course, it was through a first aid kit. But then it was an opportunity to teach them how to do care for themselves. I taught them how to do like height, weight, blood pressure, temperature. And they became little doctors at times. And so we were actually incorporating that. And so we had care. We had hospital. And then we also had.
So you created a program. You created a full service program. Yeah. Yeah. So, Doc, let me bring you back into this, because now when Ebony talks about, and let's just start with the fresh food aspect of it, we underestimate the benefit or the value of fresh vegetables and fresh fruits in our diet, don't we?
Oh, definitely. One of the many things that we don't realize is that our food is highly processed. What we access many times in the store has been refined, has been gone through factories, has been put to be on the shelf to live longer. So having something fresh that you can grow, where you have minimal additives, is probably the best thing that you can do for yourself. Things get very complicated. You can get to the minutia of the type of soil it's being grown in. But in general, if you're able to consume food that is fresh, literally feeding your body the best possible thing it can have. When we talk about access, we have such limited things. So if you're able to do something amazing like Ebony is in her own backyard, we wish that for everyone. That's not always possible, but if we can try to encourage everyone to try to get to fresh food or get that access to fresh food, we can do that best thing for ourselves.
I tell you what, and I'm just so excited. Ebony talks about this, and I'm somebody who got up early this morning so I could go to a farmer's market versus hosting a farmer's market. I love it. But we have a lot more ground to cover today on Minority Health Matters. I know if you're like me, you're glad you tuned in. Stick around. We have a lot more to come. Welcome back to Minority Health Matters. I am your host, Lynn Hayes Freeland. We're talking about feeling good, or things that we can do to help us feel good, to help us feel better. Two guests today, Ebony Evans and Chantel Villalobos are my guests. And Ebony, let me circle back to you at this point. You talk about you introduce the kids Okay, all right. We'll get Ebony back in just a second. And so, Doc, let me ask you this, because I think, you know, so many black and brown people live in what are called food deserts. I know that, you know, the Hill District community was so excited to have Salim's open up in the Hill District. And so that continues, though, to contribute, does it not, to some of the health issues that we see in predominantly black and brown communities?
Oh, definitely. The biggest thing that we want people to focus on and realize is that even though folks want to try to do better for their health, it's very limited to what their environment has. And a lot of black and brown folks are living in areas, as you said, food deserts, which is where you don't have access to a good nutritious food, or you have less access to, or not affordable. Because if you have a store that's really expensive and nobody there can afford the food, that's still a food desert. Mm. So you have something like the Hill District for years not having any access to food. We're so grateful and happy that Salim's is there now. But this was a long, long time coming, and this was a long process that we finally got that. And in today's world, and having the University of Pittsburgh right there, and knowing that disparity that has existed, and having the great data that we have produced about these type of food deserts and what the impact has been, and yet we still have this huge problem, you can imagine in other areas where there isn't so much focus and so many resources pouring in to try to do something about it, that people are just living in these areas without access. And so then that
Absolutely.
Is a huge part of it.
So Ebony, then talk to me a little bit, what are some of the favorites, especially that the kids like to grow and ultimately like to eat?
Yeah, so one of the very first things that we learned to grow together were tomatoes. And at the time, I wasn't even a tomato lover. But once I realized, and we realized together, that there were so many different varieties of tomatoes, and they all taste different, and they all grow differently as well. So it's like watching a rainbow. And so that is a favorite that I would say that started then and still a favorite for me now and the audience now. And so, what was your other part? I'm sorry.
I don't remember. I know. I was curious what they like to grow. But let me ask you this. What is the most unusual? Was there something that you introduced to them via the garden that they had never had or heard of before?
Well, I would say every part of it, every part of it. I mean, they had never at the time seen anything growing, just like myself when I was their age. They had no idea where food came from at all. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that still seems to be the case today. Whenever I ask like different youth, where does food come from? They don't seem to know. So it was a discovery for all of them, all of us at the time. So just understanding where food comes from, and it can come right from your backyard.
It can come right from your backyard. So, Doctor, let me ask you this, because, and again, I just last year for the first time, I kind of started trying my hand at gardening. Some things were successful, some weren't. But all of a sudden, when I could get fresh vegetables from my yard, I became much more aware of the balance on my plate and what I had and what I needed. Is, you know, are some of those old pyramids that we used to see still relevant in terms of, you know, what color vegetables and things we need on our plate?
Yeah, I think it can be a good starting point, a good guide for people to have. Whatever might be the simplest way for someone to understand what to be doing with their plate, but we also kind of have to put in perspective what we're used to in this so-called American diet, and some of those things that we need to kind of say, hey, this may not be the best way to be consuming food. We also have to incorporate our cultures, right? And so then what we're used to eating, and it's important to have that as part of, you know, our plate and what we may see that. But you want to balance it with a good amount of protein, good fats, and then you have the carbs. But that's fruits and vegetables, and you can have some grains in there as well. And a good proportion of that may be different per person depending on your medical conditions or depending on what you may have. Mm. But you can have a general guide still using that healthy eating plate and then kind of with your doctor having that conversation too, if that should look different or how to modify it. But it's still a good guide in general. And then they're still always updating what that looks like. The pyramid, we use less, But the plate is a little bit easier to focus and understand, and you can look those up and see what that looks like and breaks down.
And breaks down for you. Ebony, give me an idea. So I love the fact that this is so kid-focused, so young people-driven. How have you seen their eating habits change since they got involved in farming?
I've seen it change a lot. Since then, we have obtained two urban farms in our community, and I also have a fresh food corner store. And a lot of the youth, they not only come to the store, they volunteer at the store in order to continue to learn how to access local food and learning about it, where it comes from, learning how to eat it, different classes that teach us how to make different recipes, how healthy things are. So it's a process, but I certainly see an increase in our youth eating healthier and just the families in general. A lot of people that I've been running into lately for the last few years have been very interested in eating healthy.
And then let me squeeze this last question in before we have to go to the break. You mentioned recipes, and I think of a time that I was volunteering at the Pittsburgh Food Bank, and we had all of these different fresh vegetables, but no one knew how to cook them. So having the food is one thing, but knowing what to do with it is something else, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Knowing what to do with it is most of the battle. Even when I remember one of the first years that I started a community garden and worked with the community, even elders, we grew the food, took care of the food right in our faces. And when it was done, they didn't even want to eat it. They didn't know what to do with it, especially when there were different tomatoes that grew differently, that looked different. It wasn't things that they were used to seeing in their local supermarkets. And so it was hard to get people to eat the food that they saw grow right in their faces. And so what we did was we got a chef to come into the garden and just pick the food right in everybody's faces and cook it right in everybody's faces. And we all ate it together and experienced it together.
Fascinating indeed. I as I said, I am a very novice, very early endorser of farming at this point. Some of my garden did very well. Things like my sweet potatoes did very well. My fruits didn't do well last year, but I'm not giving up on that. Bottom line is this: there are many things that you can do to create a healthier lifestyle. We have focused in this half hour on what we eat, what we consume. We're going to take a break for the news. And when we come back on the other side, we're going to talk about lifestyle, exercise, outdoors, sunshine, all of those things, and how they fit together with what you're eating to create a healthier lifestyle. Let's be honest, folks. It's not always easy to make the healthiest choices. But in the long run, when you look at the medical concerns facing Black and Brown communities, it is well worth it. You are listening to Minority Health Matters. I am your host, Lynn Hayes Freeland. We have a lot more ground to cover, so I hope you will stick around when we continue. We are back on Minority Health Matters. I am Lynn Hayes Freeland, and I tell you what, even though the weather outside isn't quite where we want it for springtime weather, it's time to start thinking about doing more outdoors, getting outdoors, exercising, eating right, all of those things. And that, in fact, is the focus of this edition of Minority Health Matters. Continuing the conversation, now Dr. Chantel Villalobos is still with us. And we have two students from the Gateway to Medicine program joining me now. And I'm going to be honest, I have two spellings on this, so I'm not sure. Is it Dayron? Is that correct? Is your first name Dayron?
Yes, it is.
Dayron, are you there? Okay, perfect. And then I wrote it again, and I had a T in it, so I just wanted to make sure. And pronounce your last name for me, Dayron.
Cojetero.
Cojetero. Okay, and Jarrell Knapp. Is that correct, Jarrell?
Yes.
All right. Awesome. So I want to start with you two. And Dayron, I'll go to you first. I mentioned that it's spring and people want to get outdoors. How important as a young person is exercise, being outside, getting fit? How important is that to you?
Personally, I believe it's really important because over time you can adapt new abilities on what you can do and then you might even get like a hobby. You probably could spend more time, and it could also benefit your health.
Okay. And Jarrell, what about you? I mean, because here's what happens. I think we tend to think of young guys in particular as playing basketball, but playing basketball more out of the love of the game, not so much for the exercise benefit, although there's both. But tell me how you look at just being more active and how that fits into your lifestyle.
I think it fits into the lifestyle because it can help people experience new things and like also try new things out, like Dayron say, experience new hobbies.
Now, let me follow up with you. What are your preferred methods of exercise? What do you do on a regular basis?
Sometimes I would walk around, and I'd also go out and play basketball.
Okay. All right. So, Doc, let me ask you this, and I guess what I'm thinking is when you are their age, exercise means one thing. But when you are more seasoned in life, exercise starts to look different, doesn't it? Differently.
Definitely. Definitely. One point that's really important to keep in mind is that we all need exercise. It doesn't matter if you are very young, if you're in your teens, your 20s, or, as you said, more seasoned, 50s, 60s, 70s, 90s. Everyone needs exercise. And actually, the older you get, you know, people tend to do it less, but you really want to focus in and bring it in more, including things like weight training. And you say weight training, and you're like, yes. And an older woman specifically, you have things that can help with bone health. We actually recommend for women to prevent osteoporosis or who have osteoporosis to making sure that they're doing some type of weight training. Am I saying to be a heavy bodybuilder? No, but I actually want to have weight incorporated, lifting weights, 5 to 3 pounds, whatever you'd like. It could be a lot more, but at least something to help you with resistance as you're working on keeping your bones healthy. So it's important for all of us to have that, whether or not you're hitting the gym hardcore every day, doing home exercises, or you're outside running around. These are important things for everyone to keep doing.
Now, in terms of weight management, Doctor, it seems like there's an ongoing debate about whether or not it is what you eat or how many calories you burn. Where do you fall in this debate?
Well, you're right. It is a big debate. And ultimately, it's always there's no one simple answer. And that's what you can always bank on. Many things people look for, you know, you want to Google, you want to get an answer and say one is the definitive thing. And the answer, I believe, is it's a combination. And everything is suited per person. So you have the type of food that you are consuming based off of what your body needs, you know, and the amount that you're having. A high amount of food that you consume, high calorie intake, can lead to increase in weight. And if you decrease that, you can lose weight. Cutting back a significant amount can have different impacts. And so people may have difficulty losing weight, even if they cut back a lot, and then still consume certain bad types of food. So it's what you're eating and how much you're eating, and it's a combination. And different people have different body types. So someone says, I cut back and I still ate badly, but I ate a lot less and I lost a ton of weight. So then someone says, oh, that's not true then. But it depends really on the person. Some people can get that results and some others can't. But what you are taking in will have an impact on your health, whether or not you're small, you've lost a lot of weight, or if you're large. And so the health aspect really has a big combination of the amount that you're taking in and what you're taking in, and then activity, as we're talking about.
Awesome. Now, Dayron, let me ask you, how much do you pay attention to what you're eating? Do you sit down and think about like fresh foods versus fried foods? Is that something that you even think about?
On a daily basis, sometimes, yes. Because, like, when I sit down, I would sometimes track calories over the summer.
Ah.
And so, yeah, basically, I would.
And let me follow up with that. You track calories sometimes over the summer. And what did you learn about yourself and your eating habits when you did that?
That, like, I could adjust, like, on how much I would eat. Like, I could control, like, my hunger after I started counting calories.
Okay, and that's something you just did on your own. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Jarrell, what about you? Do you think about what you eat on a regular basis? You know, and I'll be honest, guys, it's a lot easier at your age to not think about it than it is at my age. But I'm curious because we're talking, you know, building lifelong habits almost.
Yes. Sometimes when I'm in the store, I will track the calories that, I mean, other things that I eat on a daily basis.
So we talked in the last half hour with Ebony Evans, who is an educator and a farmer, and she talked about introducing the idea of growing fresh vegetables to a group of young people, in particular in her West End neighborhood. But Jarrell, I'm going to stay with you for right now. Do you make a conscious decision like, hey, I need to get more fresh vegetables, I need to have some more tomatoes, some more lettuce or green beans or whatever? Is that something that you think about?
No, not really, not often.
And so when you eat dinner, say, at home with your family, do you tend to have fresh vegetables or vegetables on your plate?
Yes.
Okay. So then, doctor, it sounds to me like that's still in terms of a balanced plate, and we talked in the last segment about that plate idea. It sounds to me like that's still something that, as parents, we have to take the lead in.
Oh, definitely. I think a lot of it, right, if we go back to tying in a lot of the cultural aspect, how we grow up in our environment is going to have a big impact on who you are when you're growing up and raising your children and what you do in life. And so culturally, we haven't really been able to focus on, you know, our health, minority health, and what that looks like, what our plates look like, having the access to food because we've been so limited and just trying to survive and been in this mode of survival. So then you can't be talking about getting some apples and getting some fruits and veggies when we're just trying to have access to be able to vote, to be able to live, and to be able to survive and have jobs. And so then now we really want to push all of these other topics that we think is extremely important for our health so that people can grow up having these conversations with their parents and being able to have that access and to see the world that we all deserve to have with equality and access and being able to say, hey, yeah, I grew up in the house talking about vegetables and having these foods. And then now I have my children talking about it and knowing them and knowing how to grow food and knowing how to count calories and what that looks like to read nutrition facts and learning those components and saying, yeah, I'm used to that. That's how I grew up. Mm-hmm. We want that for our people as well. And so then it's a huge part of it. And as parents, I recognize it may be so difficult that you have so much going on, but we can take moments to access some resources that have already been accumulating and being put together. But a lot of us in healthcare and folks like Ebony that are doing these wonderful community projects to say, yeah, this is already existing. So let's tap into it. And this is how I can teach my kids. And this is how I can learn about it so that I can pass it on. And we want the best for our families. And so then here's access to some things, even though we could do so much more, we have some things already going so that we can all get to that place.
That we can tap into. I want to talk, we're going to take a commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk with the students about lunch in school. And I know some students also have breakfast in school, but I want to talk about those, where they fit into all this. And then before we're done, we'll get some tips that you can take away with you after this edition. So stick around. Minority Health Matters. We'll be right back. I swear we do this Minority Health Matters once a month, and it's got to be one of the fastest hours on radio. Maybe that's just me. I'm Lynn Hayes Freeland. We've been talking about getting healthy, healthy lifestyles, healthy eating. I have had a series of guests throughout the course of the show, two of which are students, Dayron and Jarrell. And guys, Dayron, maybe you go first, but I want to talk to me about, I know you probably eat lunch at school. I'm guessing it's a lunch that your school provides. How diverse is it and how healthy do you feel like it is?
Personally, I do not feel like it's healthy because over the summer when I lost weight about it, I tried tracking school lunches and stuff, but they didn't have any calorie nutrition in the back. So,
okay.
Which made it really difficult to track everything.
And so, like, a school lunch, is that like, and it's been a minute since I've been around school lunches, but are you having things like pizza, chicken nuggets? Is that the kind of stuff you get in a school lunch?
Yeah.
Okay. And Jarrell, same thing for you. What do you think about school lunches? And I know some schools actually offer breakfast too. I don't know if yours does or if you even know what's in the breakfast. But if that's the case, tell me your impression of both or one of them.
I think my school lunches and breakfasts are healthy because during lunch, it would come with a fruit or a vegetable. And then during breakfast, it always comes with, like, a variety of fruits.
Okay, so between what you get breakfast and lunch and then you do dinner at home, is that correct? Because I know there are some schools that actually do dinner these days. But you do dinner at home, so when you look at your whole day, do you feel like you've had a balanced meal? Balanced meals?
Yes.
So then, Doctor, I'm kind of surprised. Well, I guess I'm not, because between Daron and Jarrell, they kind of gave us different perspectives. But when we look at our young people in particular, how confident are we that they are getting the exposures they need through things like lunch and breakfast programs?
Honestly, I'm not very confident. And I think it also depends on the areas we're talking about and the schools that we're talking about. There has been big movements to improve that. Schools do also now have more strict limitations as far as what they're allowed to serve kids, which is good. I know many kids like to have some of the sweets and things available, but it's still very surprising. I mean, I ask my patients, I see, you know, from babies to people at end of life, and so I hear a lot of the different things and ask them what kind of things you're having at lunch and school, and you'd be very surprised with the access that they have to a giant amount of really unhealthy foods. So I think we're still not there. It does depend on where you are. And then there's also choice, right? So kids have choice. A lot of the times they're going to be picking things that maybe aren't as healthy. So that's why we have to have that part of the education in the schools as well. And I'm not sure now how much is being pushed in a nutrition course or in different classes that talk about nutrition and then having them have the access. If they say, make sure you're eating this fruits and vegetables, but then they never have that as an option. You know, maybe day around school doesn't have that. And then Jarrell does see that. And so then we have these discrepancies, right? So we're hopeful to have more, but I'm not too confident right now that across the board, a great option for kids with school lunches.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it. And it's kind of interesting when I think back several years ago and then First Lady Michelle Obama made a big deal about the garden at the White House and getting fresh fruits and vegetables. And everyone was talking about it, even those who were critical of her, mind you. But at least it was a conversation. And now it seems like we've kind of gotten away from that. But thanks to people like Ebony, who was on in the last half hour, we're kind of getting back to it. I know you had a couple of tips that you were going to share with us for healthy living before we go. What do those sound like? And young gentlemen, I'm going to get you to respond to these tips. So pay attention.
No, so just in general, thinking about living healthily and being able to eat well and get physically active, you want to think about, you know, how and why that's important. You want to make sure that we're thinking, oh, this can actually help my health. Things like improving your longevity, which is increasing your lifespan, decreasing heart disease, decreasing the potential for hypertension or diabetes. It improves for injury prevention and things like improving pain. So all those things are really important. And when you want to think about getting good foods, well, look at stores that might be more affordable, something like Aldi. They have fruits and vegetables, and it's a more of affordable store, and they have those around Pittsburgh. Or if you have whatever food you have, make a smaller portion size for yourself, and so you're working with what you got. Or hit up food pantries. If you're someone who needs more access to food, there's a lot of food pantries around Pittsburgh. And a really cool tip is the fact that there are more healthier options now at food pantries, and some maybe have limited supply, but they have fruits and vegetables. If you find a place that says, we have fruits and vegetables, but it's only for certain people, your doctor can write you a note and says, this person needs it, and someone like me, I would happily write notes, I've done this for patients. And so you say, hey, based off of my recommendations, this patient needs access to this healthier food, and you can get that at those food pantries for free. So these are kind of cool things that are out there already. And for exercising, you want to get out there and use what you have. Take advantage of at work. Go up and down the stairs. Take a break. You know, take a lap around. I know that access to gyms is sometimes very difficult for folks, or going around the neighborhood can be dangerous for some folks. And so then making kind of creative things, make it a game, do something at home that you can do that's going to make you active. Use home workout videos. There's a lot of videos there for free.
and you can have those. Or use something like the insurance companies where you can actually access a very affordable gym membership. This is what I have. Ask your insurance company about it. But you can get something around $20-ish dollars a month, access to hundreds of gyms. And it's actually really cool. Gyms that are a lot more expensive, that are around everywhere, and you can have access to all of them at the same time. And so it's actually a really nice addition that people have no idea that exists. And so in general, just make sure you get available. Out there, yeah. Get a doctor, and get active. And so you can have, you know, there a healthier life.
And guys, real quick, in 15 seconds or less, do one or both of you, Dayron, I'll start with you. Do you belong to a gym, go to a gym, or do you pretty much work out on your own?
Over the summer, I used to go to one, but then after that, I couldn't go due to some issues like where the gym was located at.
Okay. All right. And Jarrell, what about you?
Right now, I don't.
Okay. Jarrell, what about you?
During, like, in August through December last year, I would go to Planet Fitness from time to time.
Okay. Okay, so it is doable. Here's the bottom line, folks. We can live healthier lifestyles. We just have to make that effort. Like I said, this is the fastest half hour in radio on any given week. I thank all of my guests for joining us today. Great information, and we may have to continue this next week. In the meantime, I'm Lynn Hayes Freeland. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.